Back to the modern democracy. It is so wonderful to have you here with me today. So I've actually realized that looking at my podcast stats, I have some listeners who extend beyond the confines of New South Wales, since we have been thankfully growing at a very rapid rate. And I realized I have not even mentioned my name, so truly I sound like a ghostwriter. So hello, I am Phoebe, and today we are going to be talking about the housing crisis. And it might sound really boring and something that's not even remotely applicable to you, but I am here to tell you that it is. If you're a young Australian and you have ever wanted to own property, or you want to just gain a greater depth of understanding of the problems currently facing the nation, you'd really want to be listening to this. I'm going to be going through the causes of the housing crisis, how it's affecting Australia, and what it specifically means for people like you and I, and what solutions are out there that can potentially solve this really massive problem. If there's one episode that I'll make that's most applicable to anyone's life, probably, it's this one. So sit back, relax, and let's jump straight into today's topic. Australia is facing a housing crisis, and this just means that right now, affordable housing, or you know, housing that ordinary people who aren't upper middle class can buy or rent, is scarce. Owning property and home ownership, I am sure you've heard of this before, is important because it's a way that you build wealth. So, you know, by purchasing these assets, one day you'll be able to sell them for a higher price and make money off of it. The problem that we're going through right now is that houses are actually so expensive that no one can afford to buy one. They're averaging at $1.3 million per house, which is about 17 times the national average income, which means a lot of people are having to rent. And by renting, you're not necessarily building any wealth. These people who are renting and can't afford to buy a house are what we call locked out of the housing market. And these people are usually young people. And therefore, young people aren't really building any wealth for themselves in the future. And the people who do own houses and who have built wealth and are building wealth for the future are older people. They have their house that they can sell and make money off of it, and they might also have more than one house, which they could rent out to a younger person. You have a huge imbalance of wealth and ownership right now, or what we call a housing monopoly. You have older generations and upper middle class people basically owning all of the houses, with one person or one family maybe owning multiple. And you have younger people who are renting these houses and can't afford to buy one because they are just so expensive. You without a doubt have an imbalance of power and an imbalance of ownership here. It's fostering what we call intergenerational inequality. And no one can buy a house, and even renting has become so expensive. And it's brought up this problem that a lot of people are thinking about, that in the land of a fair go, you've also seen about a 14% increase in homelessness in Australia. And because of this exorbitantly high price on houses, you've got low to middle income people spending more than 30% of their income on housing costs, which is definitely a lot, which leaves less things for, you know, things like groceries and paying for your child's school and maybe other areas of life. So the housing crisis in this way kind of becomes a cost of living crisis. So now that we know why it's important to own property and how older people typically own more houses as opposed to young people, let's see what's actually caused this crisis.
The cause is interest rates and supply and demand. And it does sound quite technical, but I promise you it is not. Interest rates are those small little fees or surcharges that, you know, banks will charge you when you're borrowing money or you're taking out a loan. And they have been super low this past decade. They've been about 0.1%, which is like a record low, which means people can now borrow money from the bank super cheaply because that little surcharge is just really small and a lot less. And now that it's super easy to get money from the bank, right, people can take out loans and everyone really wants to buy a house, which means you have seen an increase or a huge jump in the demand for housing. Literally everyone wants a house. But the problem is, though, there aren't enough houses for everyone who wants one to have one, which means you've got limited supply, or like basically there's a shortage of houses. And in short, the government have not built enough houses, and we simply do not have enough. And economically speaking, when you have demand that is really high and supply that is really low, the price skyrockets. One of the main reasons that prices are so high is that a lot of people want a house, but there aren't many houses available. So this reason should explain why houses are super pricey right now. An example of where the housing crisis becomes a cost of living issue is that a lot of people are actually in a lot of debt right now. Because when interest rates are really low, we know it's cheaper to get more and more money from the bank. And more money you get from the bank, the more and more you're in debt because you're having to pay that back. And if you've got heaps of debt and you're trying to pay off your house, and if you ever have, I don't know, a sudden illness, an unexpected bill, or a loss of income, you can fall behind, and some people can actually lose the house. They can get behind on their payments. And this is where housing prices may come and go, but you know, debt is forever. And this is one problem where it puts a lot of households in a position of limited financial mobility. The second cause is what we call negative gearing, and it is without a doubt a complex legislative reform that I'm going to try really, really hard to explain simply. But it is a huge reason that it's easier once you have one house to basically just purchase heaps of other houses and build a monopoly that keeps everyone else renting and not owning property while you can own a lot. And it was introduced in the 1980s by the Labour legends Bob Hawke and Paul Keating with the intention to encourage investing. And they basically just wanted to take the pressure off the government needing to build all these houses. And they wanted to give industries like the construction industry a bit more of an incentive to build them instead. And while it was a smart idea at the time, it has not been reformed for the present situation right now. Negative gearing is basically when you borrow money from the bank, right, to buy a property. The income that you make from that investment property, which is the rent money, will usually be less than your expenses, so like maintenance and stuff, which means you're often losing money sometimes when you buy an investment property. But people who already have houses and they buy other houses want to make money from them eventually, so losing money is definitely not what they want. So Australian law basically allows people who are buying that house to claim those maintenance or expenses or losses on tax. And in short, negative gearing makes it super easy for people to invest in houses and have multiple. So if you have one, it's pretty easy to get a hand on some more. So older generations who have built wealth by acquiring heaps of houses and basically are able to keep buying them by just claiming the maintenance costs on tax can basically monopolize these properties and force people to rent from them. And because, you know, these oldies and high income people who own multiple houses, they can limit supply, and even when there is heaps of demand, they can skyrocket the price. Negative gearing is also one of those things that just makes it super, super hard for people to climb up that wealth ladder because they basically have to rent and houses are just too expensive to buy. And it seriously is something that fosters a wealth divide between house owners and house renters, who are usually young people. Now we are on to number three, which is a huge, huge cause of the housing crisis, and it is having a direct effect on it, and that is wage growth. I mentioned earlier that the average house prices are 17 times the national average income. That is a lot, and there is a huge problem. You have housing prices that are skyrocketing and rising, basically, and people's incomes that kind of aren't. And this whole notion of people's income rising is just what we call wage growth, and there is a serious lack of it, and it's pretty bad. And as per usual, you can thank the good old Liberal Party for this one. Wage growth is basically just someone's hourly or daily rate of pay adjusted for inflation. I know inflation sounds scary, but hang on with me for a second. So every year you might notice that the prices of things might rise a little bit. Your fave chalky milk might be $1 more expensive every year. That's basically inflation, the price of things kind of rising, and it is a good thing. So the things that are causing wage growth to actually slow are things like the policies that the LNP have introduced. And one of them is freezing the wages of people who work in the public sector, so basically stopping them from growing at all. People who work in healthcare, childcare, or government. You also have this compounded by high rates of what we call underemployment. So underemployment is basically where people might have jobs, they might be employed, but they can't get enough hours to work to earn more money. They don't have as many hours as they would like to. And you also have a decline in the terms of trade. So basically, I'm sure you have heard of this before, but back in John Howard's day, we had a mining boom. China was buying heaps of our stuff, and because we had all of this money coming into the country, it basically meant that people got paid a hell of a lot more. And during this time, we became so reliant on our mining and our coal and our gas industries that we seriously didn't think to invest or expand any new industries like, you know, renewable energy or, say, new technologies for farming. So when our mining kind of stopped booming, people's wages kind of just stagnated and stopped, and wages in some industries are still slagging. And the Liberal government aren't really doing anything to fix it. In fact, it's now showing in the McHale Institute that if wages were growing at the rate that they were under Labor governments, everyone in Australia would have an extra $250 in their pocket. Yep, the Liberal government are costing you $250 a week. These are also some of the reasons that wages aren't growing, and it is having a direct effect on the housing prices. If you have prices that are going up, and incomes that are staying the same or even going down, there is a huge problem. There also are some other minor things too that continue to exacerbate the problem, but they're probably not worth going into with a lot of detail. You've got things like rapid population growth, which can increase the demand for housing as a lot of people come over here. You have lots of regulation that builders have to overcome when building houses, which makes increasing the supply of houses a lot slower. And when you have these small elements combined with our big elements like the interest rates and negative gearing, it all pushes up housing prices and basically makes it just so much harder to buy a house. So now that we have the causes, what are the experts even proposing we do to fix it, and what are our political parties even doing to address it? Well, the first solution or the first suggestion is construction of social or public housing, which basically is just, you know, decent, safe rental housing for low-income families. And it's beneficial for two reasons. Firstly, if the government is assisting low-income people and basically helping them with their rent, they can save more of their personal income on buying property. But it's also making sure that supply, which is really limited, meets the demand, which is in excess. So the two kind of are equal, and we achieve a little bit of an equilibrium here, which will really help change the price. And it is no shock that the Liberal Party are not very big on social housing. They really don't like the idea of it, with only about $300 million being dedicated to it, which might seem like a lot, but it's really not in the grand scheme of things. Labor, however, want to allocate $10 billion in a future fund for building 30,000 affordable houses like they proposed in their 2021 federal budget reply. The Liberal Party instead made a program called Home Builder. And if I'm going to insert my personal opinion here, I would say it's a pretty mendacious policy. It basically was going to give $25,000 to homeowners or new homeowners who earned around $200,000 a year. And I'll give you a hint, not many people earn around $200,000 a year. People with $200,000 a year are very easily able to go to the bank and take out, let's say, a six-figure bank loan and pay it back. So shock horror, the program really did nothing to fix the problem. And again, it did appear to be just handouts to wealthy people. And if I'm going to put my personal opinion there again, I really can say there is no justification for using taxpayer money and public money and giving it to well-off older homeowners when literally thousands of Australians are forced to live without a secure roof over their head and are out on the street. The next suggestion you have proposed by experts is using rent control. So in Australia, very interestingly, there is actually no law that puts a cap basically on how much landlords can charge you for rent. Especially when we are in a pandemic. Renters are usually people who earn less than homeowners, according to quite a lot of research. And if we basically control and regulate rent so that landlords can't charge these, you know, crazy, exorbitant, unsustainable prices for a living, they can kind of keep their money, save up for property, and limit a bit of their personal financial stress. The third solution and suggestion is phasing out negative gearing and basically getting people to pay higher tax on the money that you make from all of those houses and all of those real estate investments. And this is going to help curb all of those crazy exorbitant benefits that people receive from high income earners basically monopolizing houses and allowing everyone to have a chance to buy a nice, affordable house. And negative gearing, with the really good intentions that they did have back in the 1980s, it hasn't changed with the times, and now it's giving out some negative consequences that are making the housing price go sky high. So that basically concludes our discussion today on the housing crisis in Australia. We talked about why owning property is really important to increase your wealth and your economic security. We talked about why we even have a housing crisis and noting on our supply and demand problem, our negative gearing laws, and our lack of wage growth. And what we can actually do to fix it, like commissioning more public houses, phasing out negative gearing and implementing rent control. So I hope today's episode gave you a clearer picture of what's happening in the Aussie housing market and how you might consider these things if you ever want to buy a house or own property as a young person. So thank you so much for listening. I hope you have enjoyed our talk today and learned something. See you soon and have a wonderful day.